Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined by the top corner king, Madison.
Yeah, it's been like 2 weeks since I've been on, so it's good to be back.
And we've also got Steph filling in for Torgrud.
He needs no introduction.
Oh, we've started now.
That. The knee joke's going to be coming thick and fast, but glad to be back.
Yeah, Steph's currently recovering from a knee ligament operation, an arthroscopy, which is something that Alessandro Florenzi in particular is familiar with, having had two in a season. Get well soon, Steph. Recovery's going well. We're assured that he's not high off his face on painkillers. So, you know, if you hear any ridiculous takes from him, then you can't blame it on the codeine.
He did mention Oliver's face was melting before the podcast started, but nothing
that's just me having a stroke. Apologies, of course, to anybody who's been affected by somebody who's had a stroke. Before we dive into this one, got to shout out the Substack founding members, Des Windsor McGlynn, Ali Tarine, Tito Mack, Moritz Pullman, Joey Gawler, Kevin, MG and Mats, Luke Villano and Raul Escobar. My rhythm with that is improving every single week. Thank you to all those guys for loyally supporting what we do over on the Substack side of things. And this week, for the first time, if you're watching on video, we've got a little visual aid for you in terms of what you can get on the Substack, which, as Steph is pointing to there. So the most recent bonus article, which went out last night, was Isaac taking a look at the defensive collapse that Milan have had in 2024. We're obviously going to come on to the Frosinone game, but just in general, why we've been conceding so many goals, and he breaks down factor by factor. There's other things on the left-hand side. You can see he did a deep dive into two of our Danish employees who have left, Alex Rasmussen and Kasper Stilsvig. They were, as I say, on the commercial side of things, and it's all about the business that they did, increasing our list of partners and the void that's there to be filled. You'll see as well on the other side, the psychological battle, which talks about the struggles that we've had in terms of, you know, mental resilience in what's been a difficult season for us. And then there's also something on the stadium project, which has moved forward a bit in the last few weeks. So that's the kind of thing you can expect on a weekly cycle of written content that comes out on our Substack, which is named Sempre Milan Insider, as you can see. And we've also got the bonus podcast, which we can bring up here too. We did last week, myself, Madison and AJ did a January transfer window review, looking back at the business that we did do and probably more importantly, the business we didn't do. We've also spoken recently about our pursuit of an under-23 team in Serie C for next season. We did kind of a hot takes prediction type thing for how each head coach that's been linked would do with Milan, and also some hot takes on how the second half of the season will go. The one that we're recording later this week, most likely on Friday, we'll be taking a look at the players that we've currently got out on loan and how they're getting on, with a particular emphasis on Shaldi Ketelaere, who is setting the world alight at Atalanta. So there you go. There is a bit of an insight into what you can get from the bonus content that we put out. A reminder that it's five euros per month, or you can sign up for the year for 50 euros, so you get a bit of a discount there. And you can also try 7 days for free to see if you like it, and then, of course, you can upgrade from there. Thanks again to the founding members. And for Maddie's visual aids and running the slides as well. That was great of him to do. And we move on to the first and only recap of the week. Enjoy it while you can, boys, because we're going back to two games a week from here on out. Frosinone away, Saturday night, Stadio Benito Stirpe. I think in predictions, we're fairly confident of getting all 3 points in this one. They were 13th in the table. They've been a bit more exciting to watch than they've been giving credit for, really. And their main objective is just staying in the league. By God, we were made to work hard for this one.
Yes, we were.
Yeah. Started well. Giroud, nice header, far post, put us in the lead early on. And a lovely stand-up cross from Rafa Leão to perhaps answer some of the doubters when it comes to his end product. But yeah, that was a nice goal to kick things off. We'll start with the positives there.
Giroud also has... Steph, I think it's, you said 12 goals and 8 assists on the season or something.
I think like that. Nine assists, yeah, in all comps. Yeah. So it's
wild.
Yeah.
He looks like he does nothing and then he pulls out stats like that. So this is like, I feel like a very typical AC Milan performance for the past like month or so. We don't look great, but then somehow we either pull a draw out of somewhere, or I don't know how we got all 3 points here, but we managed to do it. Credit to Pioli for making the correct subs. He doesn't always get that right, but when he does, I think when Jovic came on, we were all like, oh, he's going to bag one. Like, it's going to be fine. Second touch of the game. Great goal. So maybe we'll see some rotation coming up here for players who have been in form, and instead of going with the old guard.
Yeah. I think going into this one, I think we all expected points. Frosinone not been good in form. Even the reverse fixture, so I felt like we humbled him pretty well with the 3-1 victory. Yes, they've been known first half of the season being quite brave with how they attack. And I think going away from home is a different story when they have the home advantage of fans. But I think going into this one, you'd think, you know, the injuries are still there, but ultimately the attack's there, and you think it'll be a sort of, we dispose of them as a team, not relatively easy, but without a little strain. And I think, yeah, we started well. I think there's just, and we'll come on to it, probably just an overall lack of control that we have over games. And we seem to talk about lowering ourselves to the standard of opposition, because I know we can do it. And it's not, it's a question of personnel sometimes with the midfield, and not a single one of those midfielders have a defensive bone in their body. But I still think we can, there's an element of willpower or the team unity to control games and win the ball back much faster with much more cohesion, and then own the ball and control the ball much more calmingly in possession, which I don't think we did at all against Frosinone, which, you know, led to the fixture being quite difficult. And we'll come on to their goals, which were, yeah, to be honest, I think when I first saw it, a very odd penalty. We'll talk a bit more about, you know, how that was given. And the other goal, which was, you know, completely a mistake from Mignon. But yeah, it's kind of one of them ones where, like, it's the same old stories with stupid mistakes. But I do think it comes with just a lack of overall control against weaker opponents, where we put ourselves in positions to make these games harder than what they are, and then asking for a lot towards the end of the game. But yeah, started off really well. You know, positive, great cross from Rafa from the left side. Giroud header, pinpoint. And I think, you know, Giroud deserves credit. When we sit here complaining about what he doesn't provide to the team from a transitional perspective, all the annoying flick-ons that he does. But his stats are great. His stats are really good. You know, if you look at it in isolation, how many penalties has he scored this season? I think 4 that we said. So not all of them are penalties. And he's not just stat padding against weaker sides. He is clutch in certain games. And he's getting key assists as well, 9 assists, which will come on to where he's getting most of them for Jovic. But yeah, I think we could sit here like bashing Giroud, but if he's going to bow out this season, he's going out on great numbers, isn't he?
He's just a really easy target because, like, he's like a classic number 9, right? Where he just is missing most of the game and then bangs one in. So it's easy to kind of target that one person when, for, you know, 80 minutes of the game, they're not doing much. But it's his job to score and assist. So, like,
it's a numbers game. And we were critical of Giroud after he had the hot start to the season. I think 4 of his first 5 goals were the penalties. And we were sort of criticizing his contributions from open play. And probably rightly so. But as sort of mentioned a few weeks ago, I think that you can make a strong case for Giroud being physically cooked by the midway point of the season. You know, he was starting all of the important games, and we were playing 3 games every 8 days at that point, you know, twice a week with Europe and whatnot. And we are going to come on to that again, but now at least we can rely a bit more on Jovic, who's in red hot form, and we'll obviously come on to him. But I think us playing once a week is really helping him. I think his overall contribution in games is increasing a little bit, and he is never going to be that Xerxes type who is buzzing in and around. He's playing as a 10, a 9, and as a winger all at once. But when you put the ball in dangerous areas, particularly aerially, as we've seen, I'll give him a lot of credit, because I believe he scored that goal from a 0.31 XG chance. So, you know, I'm not a massive proponent of XG, but that tells you how difficult an opportunity it was. And keeper was sort of hugging that post, and he managed to direct it downwards with enough power to fairly comfortably beat him in the end. There are a few centre forwards in the world that can put that in. It's as simple as that. So we've got to give him credit for what he did there. And then we come on to what Steph alluded to, the overall lack of control. And I think it's correct. Pioli, in his last two pre-match press conferences, has been banging on about our way of controlling games. Without being too specific, he just sort of says we need to dominate games. And the best way to control them is by attacking. We are not a very good side when it comes to keeping possession. We have 57 to their 43, I think, in this game. But Frosinone are not a possession team either. You know, their threats in the front three, and particularly Sula, as we kind of discovered in this. But Di Francesco sides are not known for keeping 60% of the ball. And yeah, we took the lead, couple of half chances, and then we were made to pay with pretty much their first foray into the box. And the penalty, I'm still a bit divided on it. I think it's one of those where, again, by the letter of the law, we'd want it given for us, and therefore it probably has to be given. But I also think it's incredibly unlucky. It's far from deliberate. It's far from what you'd consider a clear-cut call where the referee on the field has to call it. He doesn't even wait for VAR. But it once again comes back to this thing of football where we're giving teams goals for those offences. Because a penalty is, you know, 90% of penalties are scored. You're giving a team a goal for an infraction that's so small like that. And Sula scored it. Thoughts on the pen?
Maddie?
I got nothing.
Nothing.
It was a good pen. It was a solid pen. I did Sula to get a one shot on target in my ACA. So I was quite low-key, a bit happy that he kind of was taking a penalty, but
fine with the decision.
I think it's one of them ones where I would just argue a bit more consistency. I mean, this is the problem, I think, with VAR and by the letter of the law, okay, fine, it's a pen, but then where's the consistency with it? And I just don't think we're ever going to get there in football, because we'll go into probably a game and maybe in the next four games that we play, we'll see something similar to like that, and we'll be complaining that wasn't given. Not saying it's always us or anything like that, I'm just saying that the problem with those calls, it's a bit like, I don't know about that. And then consistency-wise, you'll see it again in another game and it's not given. And
that's an issue everywhere with VAR, though, you know?
Yeah. Handballs are always contentious, because it's usually there's no, like, malice or intention to actually handball the ball. Yeah. Unless, like, the Suarez one against Ghana. But, like most of them are just, like, accidental, like, clips it and... And it's this whole unnatural position. You can't, like, dissolve your arm away from your body. It's like, yeah. But it is what it was. It was a good penalty. I think at the end of the first half, you couldn't really look at that and go, like, oh, we deserve to be up at the end of that half. We invited pressure onto ourselves. So, you know, that's what happens when you do that.
Yeah, and the start to the second half was a bit worrying as well, because that's when you'd expect us to come out and once again seize the game. You know, we've had the setback before, but it wasn't even, it was in the 24th minute, so we'd had a bit of time to recover. There was that Liao deflected cross that nearly looped in, and there was a couple of scrambles in the box, but again, we never really put our stamp on the game in the early stages of the second half, and we were made to pay sort of midway through it. And this was a bizarre goal, because I think we can all chalk it down to one thing, and that is that it was a very uncharacteristic error from Mike Maignan, but also, dare I say it, a kind of familiar goal to let in based on the last two or three games. Just a simple feed to Mazzitelli down the right side of the box, and I don't even know what he's thinking shooting from there, to be honest, but he hits it low and hard, and it just goes straight through Maignan. And you sort of thinking about the goal that he let in against Udinese, where, you know, he was sort of beaten above him into the roof of the net by Florian Thauvin. And then there was the Xerxes goal for Bologna. Again, a narrow angle. The ball, people saying, you know, the ball bobbled up and that makes it hard to stop. But as a goalkeeper, you've surely got to make yourself a blocker and make it very hard for that ball to get through, no matter what the angle. It was a mistake. I think that's the first one where you can point at him and only him and say, You got to do better there.
This is the second goal,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, when they took the lead, yeah.
He should have saved that. I don't think there's any excuse for someone at a club like AC Milan to at least, you know, I mean, he was also like that close. It looked like his foot like barely missed it, but like that's positioning. I don't know if he's just not confident right now, but we've seen him make unbelievable saves. Uh-huh. And then he just lets in ones like that. So, I mean, he's still a great goalie, right? But at the end of the day, he's got to get that stuff cleaned up.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things. I just want to kind of go back to the first half. And if we look how we lined up, this Pioli's going back to this 4-3-1 again, doing off the Sheik as the cam. And a lot of people saying, you know, playing him outside of his natural position, but he's bagging goals in the previous game. So I don't see the reason why we wouldn't want to persist with him. He's finding Loftus Cheek's finding himself into the box with those cutback runs and finding a lot of luck with it or popping up in the air of headers. And so a lot of people kind of questioning why Pioli's consistently maybe applying Loftus Cheek in that advanced position rather than maybe a Reinders. I mean, you got to go with form in that sense there. But he continued with that formation again. I think the problem with a 4-2-3-1 rather than a rigid 4-3-3 or maybe a bit more strict of a 4-3-3 is that you are going to find yourself suffering in defensive phases if you do not have those two double pivots being strong defensively. And if we're playing Adli and Reinders, who are not the best defensively, I think and Loftus Cheek was on the yellow first half. Reinders got on the yellow quickly in the second half as well. And 2 minutes before this second goal for Frosinone to take the lead, he throws on Benacer and Okafor, and I think it was for Loftus Cheek and for Reinders. And Benacer's he's the guy trying to track the runner, and even him, he doesn't put them, you know, the most. I'm not really convinced with how he puts his leg out for the shot, but he's probably thinking the angle. He's not really put that much of a sweet hitter either. Surely Mike's got that one. So it's kind of like a compilation of, I'm trying to get to, is a compilation of quite a few things. It's this 4-2-3-1, which does leave ourselves exposed for space. And if you see that through ball, you're kind of questioning how the hell was he kind of made that through with the player so easily able to get that shot off. And it comes down with the lack of control with this formation. You know, Benacer just coming back from an injury as well. I'd even question if someone like Reinders or Adli would even get to that anyway. And then Mike's made a howler of an error as well. Should be saving that. And then we find ourselves in a position where kind of like the Falvin goal at Udinese away, that it was just an error and now we're 2-1 down and we're looking at ourselves questioning kind of what we're doing here. And we were creating chances, and I think that's the minimum expectation as well. I want to go back to the first half. Rafa had a few chances when he broke through. Giroud slipped him through for the left side as well. So Giroud is doing really well to link up with Rafa. He even put through Pulisic as well. So Giroud was doing a lot to create. And in the second half as well, Rafa did a lot to cut down to that byline and sort of make that pass backwards. No one was there. Make the pass at the front, at the near post. No one was there. So we were creating chances. But I just think this is the story of our season where just defensively we just ask for trouble. We ask for problems. And yes, it's stupid mistakes, i.e. giving away a penalty or someone getting a red card or Mike not saving a simple shot. But I do believe in football. We're inviting that pressure. We're inviting that chance. And in football, yes, you can't go games without not conceding chances. But I just feel like with us, we haven't got the mental maturity nor the consistency to not make mistakes. So I would just encourage if we probably just limit allowing those chances to happen and have more of a general control of the game, i.e. like what Juventus and Inter's do, and then find our way to win in a different way rather than this sort of chaos.
The chaos is from constantly changing formation, lineup, injuries. Like these players, like they don't have a lot of time. And like, here's the thing.
It's the fourth game in a row, though, that we fielded the same starting lineup.
Yeah. And I'd argue it's the same relative format.
Yeah, but like, Fabi had just joined back in January, right? So this is the same back line that's been playing for five weeks.
Yeah, but look, my argument isn't even the defense's fault. I find it's more of the midfield. And I think it's there's a general issue I've got with the attack and how they help out the defense as well and the midfield. But the midfield, I just don't think it's not created with any defensive stability. None of these midfielders are defensively shrewd. And they're not helping out the defense. Gabby has been fucking exceptional since he's come back. So credit to Wally on that.
We tried to replace Tonali, right? We didn't really do that. Bennacer was injured and then he went to AFCON. Mm-hmm. We're going to try to replace him. We didn't sign any defensive midfielders. Like Musa was supposed to play that role, but he's not, right? He gets 5-10 minutes a game. Yeah. And it's just like our signings are not exactly panning out the way we have a brand new midfield minus Bennacer, right? And
And we didn't have Bennacer for so long. I hate to do this, but you look at the other half of the city, and obviously I presume we all watched Inter Juve on Sunday night. They've had that midfield three of Barella, Calhanoglu and Mkhitaryan from right to left as a three for pretty much the entirety of the last two seasons, with Calhanoglu being, at least on paper, the deeper lying of the three. That shouldn't work on paper. That shouldn't work. There shouldn't be sufficient balance from those three players because Barella and Mkhitaryan are more attack inclined, and Calhanoglu, as we know, is a playmaker who's moved backwards. However, the reason it works is because they've got chemistry, they've got cohesion. They all know their individual responsibilities, and also they're shielding a defensive line that's very fucking good. Ours is not, you know? Mm-hmm. I think Kieran Gabbia, I've been a big fan of Gabbia since he came back, and I think you can take a look at the fullbacks as well because Teo's been guilty of some inattention and stuff like that, but they trust the players behind them. So when they're making the movements, they're doing it with confidence, they're interchanging well, and what we've got instead is, at times, what resembles headless chickens sort of cycling around.
And
as I say, you're protecting Kier Gabbia. Now, I think that they're not the main ones to blame, in particular Gabbia, but they need help. You know, they need help. They need organization. They need a bit of shielding in front of them, especially when you've got Teo still going on his adventures because we need something from the left side. Calabria has been hit and miss form-wise, although I think lately he's been a little sort of six out of ten for a few games in a row. But I just think that, it is thrown together a little bit, and I think that doesn't help with sort of establishing order in games because we are not talking about, just to be clear, and this is where I think there's a big difference in the way that we're looking at this game compared to the Udinese game. I think the Udinese game, so much of what felt like, what made it feel like a positive result afterwards is the narrative that happened. You know, we know what happened. Obviously, Mike Maignan was racially abused. We went behind, we looked rocked, and then we pulled it out of the bag. And that's one of those games where you're like, I don't care how we did it, I'm just so happy we did it. This one, we're 1-0 up. There is absolutely no excuse for losing the grip on that game, you know, against a team that are significantly worse than us and have one decent player going forward. Let's be honest, it's Sula and nobody else. It happened. We conceded two goals, one in each half. It's not like they scored twice in quick succession and we were totally all at sea. We actually had time to get back to business kind of thing and we didn't. And I just think there's such a difference in concentration and the Scudetto winning season, particularly the second half of it. You know, we conceded two goals in our final 11 games, blah, blah, blah. When we went a goal up, we won. We won that game. You know, we very rarely conceded, but we won the game. Even when we went behind, we often roared back. But that was the bottom line. We knew what we were doing in terms of managing games. And I think there are quite a few people who are sort of pointing at the squad that we have now. There's a wealth of options in midfield. We should have been able to work it out by now. We should have been able to find a formula where we're at least able to slow games down. You know, we're not talking about controlling it like we need 30 shots. We need 75% possession. We need to absolutely arsehole every team that we play because I don't think that's realistic at the moment. However, these constant slips, you know, to let in as many goals as we have, we cannot bank on being the right side of five goal thrillers anymore.
No.
You know, because better teams will put us to the sword. Look at the two losses that bookended that good run. It was against Atalanta. You know, so what happens when we play Napoli on Sunday? Will we be surprised if we get a bad result out of it?
You did say good sides, though. I don't think Napoli's
a good side. Yeah, okay, fair enough. But there's better things to come after that. But yeah, rant over. I just don't like the game management.
This midfield's been playing together for 5 months with small changes, right? Like, they've all been playing together for a good period of time. How long, like, if they're not getting cohesive, right, is the issue the personnel? Or do you blame it on Pioli for not trying to get, like, not able to do it? You know, like, what's the issue?
I think the way our game plan is based is, and it's based off that we look back to the Scudetto season, at the high press, the Kalulus and your Tomoris and your Chows. And if you're having to field the likes of Kjær or, I mean, Teo's done a very good job when he had to play centre-back as well, but even like Simic and stuff, and you had to get dip into the Primavera, like we're asking for trouble there. We're asking to concede goals. And I think our game plan's based off that and probably never going to be with this current roster or even with Pioli to going to be that controlling side. Because we were never even that anyway in probably in the Scudetto season. But the only element probably was last year when we had that bit with Krunic, Bennacer and Tonali in midfield and we shut down shop. But I think I look at this season, I look at disappointment because we have added to the roster in the attack significantly. You know, we've got Jovic adding goals, we've got Giroud putting up massive numbers, Pulisic, Okafor's got 4 goals, Chukwueze's even got 2 goals and he's not having the best season. Chaka Traore chipped in with 2 goals. Loftus-Cheek's on 5 goals. Reinders on a couple of goals. So everyone's
imagine
like,
if Leao was banging in goals.
Well, but then we win games like fucking 5-2 or like 5-3. Like it's. I still think the disappointing element this season is that we haven't got that midfield or even at least defensive element in control. I do think, and this is why I'm critical of Pioli, because I still do not forgive the shit show of the amount of injuries we had in centre-back position, because that is unexplainable, and it's not just luck. There's no fucking way in chance in hell that you have all those defenders going down over, like, what, a couple of months. And now everyone's coming out saying in 2024, oh, what have they done to fix the problem? There's only one muscle injury since the start of 2024. So they have picked up something. Well, maybe
it's been 36 days. Injured.
But fuck me,
we're just playing once going a down week. Every as well, right.
It's just, I don't know. I still think, I looked at this season, I looked at predicting what we could have achieved this season to win the league or to much more in different competitions, to go for the cup. And I still think it comes down to the fact that defensively, we just shot ourselves in the foot with the injuries. I think we had the squad there to be in the fight for something, but we're never going to get there if we have these, we keep shooting ourselves in the foot with injuries. And then now we've got this now, defensive crisis with we can't seem to get a grip on keeping clean sheets or even keeping score lines down. And then there's the element of controlling the game. That's why I'm quite disappointed by a lot of it. Is I'm actually quite happy with an attack and I'm happy when we score goals and I'm happy with some of the stories this season. But yeah, I think just from a controlling perspective, we fucked ourselves by not having a single centre back fit for it, which is crazy. But I don't know. I've gone off a tangent here just on this, but I think we should.
We actually won this game as well.
We actually did win this game.
Chiao's going to be the first one back in about 2 weeks. But this is the thing, like trying to warn people that when he and then when Kalulu and Tomori come back, I think it's Tomori before Kalulu. They're going to be rusty. They've spent a while out, so don't be surprised when. And also, you know, Chiao Gabbia would be an unparalleled centre back pairing. So we need to, unprecedented is what I mean. Unprecedented like that, you know. So there would be the need to build up the cohesion again, and Chow might be a bit rusty, and people might not have patience because they expect him to be straight.
But it'll be better than Kjær.
Yeah, I think so. We'll move on to talk about the happy stuff. Gabbia, his first ever Serie A goal. Wasn't this lovely? What a moment. Breakout player of the season. I called it a year ago, but, you know, I didn't foresee this happening. Giroud, again, having a hand in the goal. He knew it was the right option to nod it back across goal, and Gabbia couldn't really miss from where he was. That's good. It was good. It was the right time to score as well, because I think if it drifts into the final 10 minutes this game, I don't think we're pulling something out like we did against Udinese. So it was an important time to score just inside the final 20 minutes.
Was it a deliberate assist? Was it?
I kind of reminded me of that the Kier header a couple of games back when he just
accidentally. Yeah, I'm going to give him an assist for this.
Yeah, I mean it's an assist, but is it? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, do you know what? I'm going to watch it back. But yeah, talk about how good Gabi has been and how he didn't know how to celebrate. It was just a grab the ball and run job.
I mean, he's pretty much been our saving grace in defense, right? Even though we've been letting in goals, it would be far worse if we did not bring him back. And he got his first goal contribution on offense. So hopefully those continue.
Yeah, it's quite.
Cross comes over from the far side. I see what you mean. It's almost as if he's tried to nod it back inside the far post. Yeah. But what I'm going to say is he's a centre forward with enough experience to know that it's either going in or it's going in a dangerous area. You can
he's calculating the XQ, the XG as the cross comes in. He's like, nah, is that on my remit? No. The Gabia, fantastic story. I think he's had a hell of a journey, hasn't he? I think as a Milan player. And we look back to Tomori coming or Kier even probably, where you know, he was finding himself starting quite a lot of games with Romagnoli or even with Kier after Kier came and then Tomori came after that. And he probably thought he lost himself that spot due to an injury and probably due to better players coming in. And now he finds himself in a situation where, you know, what was going to be a great experience being loaned out to Villarreal, who are a decent club in La Liga, he's now come back and he's our sort of saving grace. So I'll be interested to see what happens at the end of the season because we've all been... I don't know about you, Maddie, but I've been quite critical on Kalulu's development since the Scudetto season. I have question marks at him as a starting centre-back for us just because I just don't think he's kicked on and developed. It's a bit weird one. I'll still give him patience. Everyone says, is he a right-back or is he a right centre-back in a back-three formation? Let's see what a new coach might bring as well. But does that also mean that Gabby's got a chance to stay here as well? Who knows? But... yeah, really good story for him. Really happy that he got that goal. And I know, Ollie, you were pretty happy with that because you love a bit of the giraffe, Gab.
Yes, man. Yeah. Look, all I'll say is if it was Kier, he probably misses that. You know what he's been like with three headers inside the box. Yeah. We have got some pretty vocal Kier defenders, both in the comments and on email. So please try to see the funny side of that one.
Well, wait, hold on. Kier needs to bow out this season, yeah. Like that was an awful game from him again. Like he's done, and I respect what Simon Kier's done, but he's fried, man. He ain't got
his
the pace.
First couple seasons here. He was phenomenal.
Mm. Oh, and yeah, and I'm. You know, I will. This is the time for him to bow out before it gets any worse.
I think after his injury, he just never fully came back.
When you're 32,
it's hard to admit thirties. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Just ask Steph, right? It's hard to bounce back, right?
He didn't have the best surgeon. He didn't have the best surgeon in Europe.
Harry Kane, Dr. Harry Kane.
Anyway, that's not. Yeah, but I don't know. I just think it's good that he's getting some games. Yeah, it's time, but he's looking a bit fried out there. So
his deal runs out, so like, you know, we'll sit down with him and probably evaluate what the best thing is while also telling him, look, if you stay realistically, because we're going to sign a centre-back and we hope to keep the others fit, you're going to be sixth choice. So, you know, there needs to be an element of realism about it. And that time will come. You know, it's an interesting discussion that's got to be had with Giroud as well. And one that will become clearer, no doubt, as we head into the spring.
I wonder if he stays. I don't want to keep every fucking old person here as a and join them with management or like with as a coach, but like I don't know.
Think Kier has the like name recognition at AC Milan, right? He's been here for 4 or 5 years, right? It's not like he's had this unbelievable career.
No, right?
He's definitely a leader though. Like he's been Denmark's captain for what, a decade?
He could stay on as like a sixth choice and like be like a leader during training and mentor the young guys, but like
phasing
past
out,
that,
sort of.
I don't know like if his future is here.
It depends on what he wants to do. Like, would he be that sort of vocal training ground leader? Don't know. I don't watch the training sessions at Milanello every single day, but might he be the kind of guy?
You have that much spare time in your hands?
No. I might have to do that after this and do some observations on Kier's behavioural patterns and stuff. but might he want to go down a different route? You know, so many footballers, you presume they want to go into coaching when in actual fact, you know, there's agency to go into, there's doing your sporting director badges and all that kind of stuff. So there'll be a discussion. And
maybe he doesn't want to do anything. He just wants to go back to Denmark, down. Drink beer, and, I don't know.
Yeah, man, if that's what he wants to do, then. Him and me both. Finally, we get the winner. If you need a goal at the moment, it seems you call Luka Jovic off the bench. He scored after pretty much bang on 60 seconds after coming on. Came on with 10 to go, scored in the 81st. There's not too much to analyse about this goal, but what I will say is that Frosinone, immediately after we equalised, or pretty much immediately after, went for a triple sub where they brought on two fullbacks. And they took off two forwards as part of it. So they shifted pretty obviously to a back five, arguably a back six. They were sat in for a point. And I think, I don't want to say, had they stuck to their guns a bit and asked a few more questions, blah, 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 because, you know, it's ifs and buts. But I just think at that point, we took the encouragement from it. And that's where Pioli gained the courage to throw on a couple of extra bodies and look for deliveries into the box as well, because we knew at that point it was going to be hard to play through them. So you just look to put ball into dangerous areas. And yeah, there's not too much to analyse about from the goal, apart from ball pinged into the box. Jovic manages to kind of outmuscle his man who goes down at the same time. He hits it first time on the spin with enough power to fire it into the back of the net. And his excellent form since the beginning of December continues. And we're witnessing a real resurgence here.
It's great. He's been great. I think when we signed him, no one was excited. But he's really shut us all up. So, good job. If you're listening, don't think you are.
I hope so. Good job, Luca. Yeah, he's surely going to get that renewal now, which is, you know, I think great business for us. I think there's question marks on him as a start, like centre forward in a you know front three formation as the spearhead, because he seems to get most of his goals once we're boxing that area, and he's just so red hot that anything that he's basically smashing that ball, it's going in, or it's at least a shot on target. I think you can tell that he's working off that confidence. It reminds me a lot of like Milan in 2000s. People were like comparing him to like John Dal Thomason coming up, just like throwing it in the box, and then he's just like burying it, or like Inzaghi sort of element that he just knows where the goal is, and that's something probably that was with him.
Just thinking, he just knows, right?
Yeah, he just knows.
There was a report sort of likening him to Massaro as well from the 90s, which obviously, you have to be of a certain age to have seen him live, but it's the same sort of premise. You know, we always had a more glamorous name starting up front for us, mostly Marco van Basten, and then after that, Weyer and the like. Massaro was happy to be ready to come on in those final 20 minutes, and he often scored massive goals. And we're seeing that a bit with Jovic. Can't get too carried away, you know, but he has scored four goals off the bench in the league, which is the joint most with Lautaro, who scored them all in one game away against Salernitana. So, you know, and then we've got Okafor, who's got three goals off the bench. So actually, rather than looking at the bench and thinking, what on earth are we going to do here? We have genuine options who have proven to change games.
Yeah. And it kind of goes to Pioli's thing, which is saying like our best way of controlling the game is to attack. I mean, hence to, we went 2-1 down 2 minutes after throwing on Okafor and Bennacer for Reinders and Loftus-Cheek.
Loftus-Cheek, yeah.
But then it was like, still just having the bodies there, and he doubled down even further. But I was at Pulisic for Jovic, and going back to keeping this to this sort of like 4-2-2-2 or whatever, this hybrid. And even if you look at that winning goal, we're pressing on. I think Frosinone are passing a little bit backwards naively, and you've got Teo and Bennacer on the left side, and they're pressing, and they, you know, a poor clearance out gets that clip on, and Teo's got that sort of the bit of space to work with, gives it to Bennacer, cross comes in, and you know, sometimes those small moments go your way, but it just seems that's the only way that we're winning these games, by just by saying like fuck it, throwing the cards down and just attacking teams and putting bodies into the box.
Do you take notes during games?
No, I'll just remember it.
Jesus Christ. I'm like, how does this guy remember these things?
Yeah.
I have to check when the times of the subs were and stuff and who came on for who, but yeah.
Yeah. I think it was sick around.
I remember the goal, right? I don't remember where Teo was.
I was a little bit worried that when, is it Romagnoli, I think was, no, Romagnoli. Did Romagnoli play for Rosinone? Or was that someone else?
Yeah, Simone Romagnoli. Yeah.
Yeah. He was no relation. Joric. And he kind of goes, he's a lot shittier than the other one. But he goes down, and then I'm thinking, oh, is he going to go sort of for the diet there a little bit? Yeah. But if you watch it, it's clean. It's just a bit of a calamity. Hits off the fullback, comes back
off
with
balance,
just smashes it. And then, really good, really happy for Jovic. I think, and it goes back to the whole Giroud element. People were going like, now can he get starts? And I was here about a month or so asking him to start. Maybe this is his avenue. This is his avenue that he's a fucking killer off the bench, and it's working. So, you know, to be honest, out of all of the things that aren't working or working for this Milan side, personally, I don't look at Giroud being, and the Giroud-Jovic situation being, as an element that we need to tweak. It's working because both of them banging in goals, both of them getting assists, both of them winning games.
It will see us until June.
Yeah, I'm sweet with that. Yeah. I think there's other issues, sort of the midfield out. Really good. And then I think just another nice call out, because I Maddie, you know, I shit on him sometimes, but Musa came off the bench, did a few good little bits down the right side, keep handle of the possession, win simple throw-ins and fouls.
Free kicks,
see out the game. It was calm. It wasn't like Frosinone were then piling on pressure. It was, no, let's keep the ball, and it was done. So really, really, really proud of that last end of the game, but we just, once again, in those positions where we just have to save ourselves out of the depths of hell. But three points.
What are we doing for the previous 85 minutes, right?
It's like the game management was there when the finish line's in sight. But if we go a goal up early on, we've no idea what we're doing. We've no idea what kind of tempo we should be playing at, where we should be working balls into certain areas of the pitch, drawing clever fouls and stuff like that. But after retaking the lead, final 10 minutes were a doddle, to be honest. Tops and flops, and then we'll move on. Top for me, Olivier Giroud, goal and assist. It was a really, really good performance from him. Potentially his best of the season. Just struggling to wrap my brains and think of a better one, but he was really good. That's what I think a well-rested Giroud is capable of.
I'm gonna say Gabbia. I thought his defensive performance was great, and he got us back in the game and got the team like believing again.
Rejuvenated. Yeah, Giroud. I think he should have got another assist actually. First half, that crossing for Pulisic.
Yeah,
and a little bit taller. Pulisic would have got to that one, and it would have been 2-0. But
he's short, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's about my height. So short, isn't it?
I don't know how tall you are.
I flop of the match.
Wow.
I'm going to move on from that. flop of the match. There are actually some, even though we won the game, that there are a few candidates for this one. And I think that someone else is going to pick the player that I actually think, but I'm going to mention anyway this particular player. Reinders, no bueno, not good in either phase, and we could have done without him picking up a stupid yellow card, and he got one, which means he now misses the Napoli game. There's a separate debate about whether he'd have deserved to start that Napoli game anyway, given how other midfielders have looked. You've got Benacer sort of recovering that match fitness now, but it would have been nice to have him as an option, you know, against a team that are still going to require all hands on deck to beat, despite the season that they've had. Just prior to that yellow card, did not see an awful lot from him that was good. And I think maybe it might be a blessing, this suspension. We didn't want it, but I think he just could do with a week off. And
would he have started over Benacer regardless? Or do you think
he would have done, just because of how much Pioli relies on him. I think he's played the most minutes of anybody in the season, and he's only not started one game, and he came off the bench in that, so he's played every single game. But look, that's what happens. You're going to rack up yellow cards as a midfielder, especially when we play as wide open and we welcome so many one-on-one battles across the pitch as we do. It's just the way it happened. I wasn't particularly chuffed with it.
I'm going to go Mike for the second goal that he let in. There is no reason that goal should be going in.
Yeah. I think you could pick anyone between Mike, Teo, Kier, Calabria, Reinders.
probably Pulisic. I'll say Loftus-Cheek. I'm going to go Loftus-Cheek randomly. I thought, you know, stupid yellow card again. Like, he does these, like, striker tackles where he's just, like, no chance of winning the ball.
No winning the ball, yeah.
Yeah, and then I think I just compare it based off the form that he's been on with the amount of goals he's been scoring. And he was pretty poor. He had the chance to slip through Vlaha for a great little through ball. Didn't do that. It was a game to forget. Came off quite early, and rightfully so. So, RLC.
Yeah, fair picks. Yeah,
a shout out to Liao, though, for getting his first assist in like 4 weeks. So,
yeah, he was good. Liao was good. I thought it was really good. Really good.
Yeah, like 90% of what was dangerous came through him, to be honest. And that's even with the double teaming sort of treatment that he got once again. Just needs a goal. And then I think we're going to see a resurgence from him big time. And also on Maignan, just a random stat, he's conceded the last 7 penalties that he's faced. He hasn't saved one this season, so you know, make of that what you will, but there's all the talk about his renewal and demanding a top salary. He's definitely a top 3 goalkeeper in the world, blah blah blah. Just would like to see him return to those kind of levels that we're used to. But next game's a clean slate for a goalkeeper always. Speaking of next game, Napoli come to San Siro. We owe them one because they've actually they seem to have had the rub of the green against us at San Siro in recent years, barring that Champions League first leg, obviously. They've had a pretty chaotic title defence. They were mocking us for having a bad Scudetto defence. They'd sacked, well, obviously Spalletti left. Rudy Garcia made it until mid-November and then got sacked for Walter Mazzarri. Walter Mazzarri has not been brilliant with the results either. They've lost to Inter, Juve, Roma, Torino under him. Their last 3 results are a 2-1 home win against Salernitana, drawing 0-0 against Lazio, and they beat Verona 2-1 in the last game, and they required 2 goals in the last 11 minutes to overcome a deficit there. This Napoli team, dare I say it, and this could be clipped, they're nothing to fear for me. I'm not filled with dread coming into this game. You know, last season they were twice, 3 times as good as this, and we managed to beat them.
I think that as confident as I am that we can win, it could very easily go the other way. Just because, I mean, we've been letting in 2 goals for the past couple of weeks, and somehow we've been pulling it out with a draw and a win. I think if we can lock up our defensive issues, we'll get all 3 points pretty easily.
Yeah, no. I've got a feeling it's going to look like a draw. And they shouldn't have to, because Osimhen's not going to be there for the game because he'll be in AFCON duties, regardless of where they finish in the semis, because I think they go to the third place playoffs, don't they? So he's definitely not going to be back for the game. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mario Rui's suspended, but I mean, it's minor. But I just think the way they've been playing has been very poor. I think Zielinski as well, in and out of the side because of his potential move to Inter Milan this summer as well. And I think we're at home. The only bit I'm worried about is the defence again and Man, you know, going like for like with someone like Kier against a Raspadori, or Calabria has been great against Carla, so let's hope for the same again. But I don't know. If the midfield can get control of this fucking game, like we did the last 2 times we played them in the Champions League last season, and even the 4-0, we can control this game. I think we get the win. But with Bennacer in, I'm quite keen to see how Bennacer, Adli, and probably Loftus-Cheek combine together. And I'm hoping for a bit of calmness, a bit of composure in the ball with Bennacer and Adli there, and allowing Loftus-Cheek to maybe battle the likes of Anguissa and see how they get on. Because that's going to probably remind me of what used to be there with like Kessie and those battles there prior, but let's see. But I think we can get at them certainly in defense, looking very flaky. I'll be quite keen to see how they line up Napoli. Do they go over back 3 or do they stick to the 4-3-3? Because I know
they've been playing. I was just going to say they've been playing with a 4-3-3 mostly recently, but you sort of look at their team and think, Juan Jesus is a weak link in that. defense. Let's be totally honest, looking at it. But yeah, they did a back four last game. Di Lorenzo, Rahmani, Juan Jesus, and Mario Rui. Mario Rui is banned for this game. He picked up his fifth yellow card of the season. Then he had Anguissa, Lobotka, Kajuste as the midfield three. Then Politano, Simeone, Kvaratskhelia. It's expected that Masocchi will start at left back, given that Rui is suspended. And then obviously their January signing was Cyril Ngonge. They signed Dendonka as well. And they've got Raspadori, who I guess will be potentially pushing for a start. But yeah, predictions, I guess.
Well, they've lost their last five away games and have not scored in the last four away matches. So with that being said, we're going to lose.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to go 2-0 win.
I'm going to go 2-2 draw.
Yeah, hard one to call. Hard one to call. I like taking the over on goals scored in this one, over 3.5 or something. I'm gonna tip us to win this one. I think 3-1. I think it's gonna be quite a wide open game. I don't see us keeping a clean sheet for all the stuff that we've talked about in this episode. But also I would not be stunned at all if we drop points in this particular game. As I said, Napoli in Serie A at least at home have been a bit of a bogey side for us. They'll be up for it with a point to prove. Kavara's kind of coming back into form a little bit. So it could be a tough game, this one. But I think this is a Napoli team that certainly doesn't have the same ability to dominate and control games. Control being the buzzword of this episode, I know. But and as a result, I think if it turns into a wide open one-on-one battles all over kind of game, I'd back us to take that.
Yeah.
The table doesn't lie. We've been quite a lot better this season.
Yeah. I think the key thing is that they need to chase the game, because they are chasing for a top four finish. Okay. We're looking very comfortable for that finish. And we have to use that to our advantage. Let them overcommit, and we will punish them like we've always punished them on transition with Rafa. And if we play it that way, I'm confident we'll win. And we keep very compact, and we allow them to make stupid mistakes like that, fine. But if we try to go like for like and create massive amounts of space for ourselves, for themselves against us in transition, then I think we're playing with fire here. We are asking a lot with Calabria doing one-on-ones with Carva or Simeone against Kier. Let's just remember the players that we got in defence, hopefully purely, and he doesn't treat Napoli with respect, but also confidence in what we're great at, which is our transition play. So.
And I remember
when we're up like 1-0 or 2-0, like we were in the fucking reverse fixture this season, control that with much more determination to then get the third or even kill the game off completely. Just I want us to redeem that 2-0 lead that we had in October, whenever it was, because that was, we were fucking all over them. Drew the two goals, we were like laughing, and then shocking how we sort of let that one slip.
Yeah, another prime example of our inability to sort of see through the difficult moments in games that are always going to come against teams that at least have a bit of attacking quality. Like the story last season, and maybe even the season before that, was about the two left wingers. You know, it was Liao against Di Lorenzo. I think a lot worse right backs have done a job on Liao, particularly this season. Di Lorenzo has been a pretty good right back in Serie A for some time now. As we know, he's Napoli's captain, blah, blah, blah. But Liao has seemingly always got the better of him, you know. Then on the other hand, you look at Kvaratskhelia as a good dribbler, a good shooter, not knowing which direction he's going to go into the box, and you think he should be a nightmare for Calabria, and yet Calabria stood him up pretty much every time, you know. So that was the narrative up to this point. Will it continue in this game? We shall see. Let's do some listener questions just to round off the episode then. Boys, Marco Villea asks, our players are often slow in build-up, ignoring forward runs, passing sideways or backwards. Is it purely tactics, or are the players not looking to take risks enough?
I think it kind of goes back to what we talked about at the beginning of the episode with cohesiveness. I think that the knowledge is just not there of knowing who is going to be making runs and when. So I don't know whose fault that is. Maybe Pioli, maybe, you know, they don't want to make a mistake. So
I think I want to lean more towards Pioli for two reasons. And I'm not saying everyone should be like Klopp, but I watched a really good interview with Klopp talking about how he sets his team out to play and encourage him to play the forward ball rather than play sideways or backwards, because then you lose that chance. And by not making that foot back, that forward and more of an attacking play, you then don't allow yourself to potentially reap the rewards of an element of luck or technical quality. You're then allowing the team to then come back into their natural shape. So I do think it's our coach and his preference for that. And it's probably a narrative of Italian football is much more calmer and to seep into possession terms a little bit more. It's always been like that with Italian football. So I do think that's a bit more like Pioli. And the other reason why is I think we do have technical players who would make that pass. We know Adli would make that pass. We know Reinders would make that pass. We know Benacer would make that pass. Maybe not so much Loftus-Cheek, but there are players there who are brave. There are players like Pulisic, Rafa Leao, Teo Hernandez. They like to pass forwards to keep the movement going. And if they're not doing it, I like to think it's because Pioli's on the sidelines saying, calm, calm, calm. And then he can't seem to control the game at the same time. So I'm going to put it on Pioli. And I know the fans would be like, it's always Pioli's fault. But I'm Stefano, so I know what Stefano's think. So
it's all in the name. It's all in the name. Yeah, I agree. I think, look, it goes back to the summer transfer window. You welcome 10 signings. You basically overhaul an entire midfield. It's going to be tough, and it's basically impossible to have instant chemistry and cohesion to know how each other works and that kind of thing. We put an article out on the site, which you can find, about missing catalogue of chances. It sort of basically documents how we do create plenty of opportunities, but not necessarily clear-cut chances. It's where we work the ball into dangerous areas and that final pass isn't made, or it's the wrong decision, or... and I think that's what sets us apart from being a top side, to be honest. That and the defensive stuff. But in the attacking third, it's playing that killer pass at the right moment. How many times have we seen RLC match the ball forward 60 metres and then make the wrong play? You see it with Liao as well. His decision-making's come under fire for good reason this season as well. So, it's a bit of a familiarity thing. I think it's... You know, for as much as we talk about the coaching, and I think coaching schemes are a big part of this, probably the largest part of this, players have also got to make the right decisions under pressure, and it's perhaps where we see some inexperience every now and again. But the tempo, I would like to be quicker as well. It feels like we have very few players who can force the tempo of the game effectively. It's almost like whenever we try and ramp up the amount that we're moving the ball forward, we do it far more carelessly. It's like we don't have the quality to do that. And I thought there was a really interesting comment from Capello in midweek where he said, forget about signing a new number nine in the summer. He said, Milan do need to sign a new number nine in the summer, but the most important signing that they could make is somebody to play at the base of the midfield who will control the game like we have had before. I'm starting to come around to that way of thinking. Because that's so often the metronome in a team is a good creative midfielder. Christian Espinoza asks, how do Milan stack up against Everton now? I say we'd be expected to win in a hypothetical match. And then there's a separate question, who's the best team in the Premier League that you'd feel comfortable in Milan beating?
I think AC Milan should beat Everton.
I hope so.
Yeah.
It could also be a 2-2 draw, right? Or we could squeak it out in the 85th minute. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we should beat them. What was the question? Sorry, the best team.
Who do you think?
Yeah, like how far up the Premier League table? So if you say we couldn't beat Man City, we couldn't beat.
Oh, okay.
I think, you know, like a one-off game against Liverpool. Could we do that? People say no, but.
I hate this question because it's like. I always say the same thing and give us Premier League money and then let's see what the answer is. Like it's not apples. This is apples and oranges here. You can't, I don't know. Because it's then you take it to the Champions League and then we beat Tottenham and then they beat Man City on that weekend. It's like, you can't, you can
and
never
then Everton
compare it.
Beat Man City and the next thing you know, Everton beats AC Milan.
Yeah. And they're the best team in the fucking world. So like, yeah, I don't know. Like hypothetically, I don't know what the answer is. Fuck knows. It could be as high as
could be as low as 18th.
Cause... How about with the squad the way that it is, ceteris paribus, to use the Latin phrase, all things as they are right now, where do Milan finish over a 38-game season in the Premier League? Are we a top-four team in the Premier League?
No.
With this current squad, forget all your TV money and stuff that you were talking about. I personally think that we're probably worse than Spurs this season. You know, for example, and they're fighting to get in. Villa, we're probably about the level of a team like Aston Villa.
Yeah.
That's my guess, but it's a tough question.
A tough question, but don't, I mean, injuries. I mean, Christ.
Yeah. Fully fit. Squad. Just being fully fit would be nice. And then, okay, final question. Hassan Abougiri asks, if you could choose one player from Inter to bring to Milan, who would it be and why? Hakan is tempting, but I think he's a star now because Inzaghi's system allows him to be one. He wouldn't fit back into our side. Lautaro, innit? Yeah, I would say so. Let's say you can't pick Lautaro. Let's do a Juventus player as well. All right, I'll go first with the Inter player that I would take. Barella all day.
I'll go Mkhitaryan.
No, I'm all right, but you can have him. You can have him.
I don't know. Arnautovic.
Yeah.
I don't want any of those fuckers, man. Yeah. I hate them.
Yeah. So, yeah, true. Yeah.
It's Martinez, I think.
Lautaro best. Or if you're looking at the needs for this team, we could really do with a left-footed centre-back, so maybe Bastoni. Bastoni tomorrow would be a pretty good pairing, I think. But and then for Juve, I'd take Bremer. Bremer's been outstanding this season. And again, looking at our need for a centre-back, I'd take him. People say Vlahovic, but I think he's been really streaky this season. And sometimes I watch Vlahovic play and I think, I don't get it. I don't get it. He can look absolutely awful.
Who do we get to take from the Juventus?
Probably Bremer. Center back. We need depth. Or McKennie. Or Tim Weah. You know.
I don't know. I
wonder why you pick them.
We'll stop. I'll
pick the worst player again. I'll go for Gatti.
The cat. All right, we'll wrap it up there. You know, as mentioned at the start of the episode, the bonus this week is going to be a loan roundup, and it's going to be mostly featured around Charles de Ketelaere and his red hot form at Atalanta. So tune in for that on Friday. But in the meantime, I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. Find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. Maddie, cheers for joining.
Yeah, it was nice to be back. Follow Sempre Milan TV.
And Steph. Crutch Army.
Crutch Army. Pleasure as well, guys. Hopefully might make Friday and you'll hear me ranting about CDK.
Do that on Cody.
How good he is.
Yeah, I might take codeine for that. So
as we had to do to watch him play last season.
Yeah.
thank you for watching, everyone. We will catch you in a week's time.
Gol! Ancora Teo! È una meraviglia! Il gol di Teo Hernandez! Da un'area all'altra! È una meraviglia! Senti il mio cuore!